Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
And a very good morning to you on this Wednesday, July the 29th. Welcome to Africa Link. I'm Mark Caldwell in Bonn, Germany. Coming up, Barack Obama becomes the first US president to address the African Union. This analyst tells us what she thought of his speech.
I think it was good that Obama spoke up about the issue around third terms, and he spoke about freedom of speech and, you know, in Ethiopia, there is very little freedom of speech.
And Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari travels to neighboring Cameroon for talks on combating Boko Haram.
In coming to Cameroon at a time when the Boko Haram terrorist group, which is seemingly defeated on the military front, this high-level visit is an opportunity.
We will also be going to Ghana and Mali. Stay tuned.
Top story.
US President Barack Obama concluded his five-day two-nation tour of Africa on Tuesday by delivering a keynote speech at the headquarters of the African Union in Addis Ababa. In his speech, he criticized rights abuses and leaders who stay in power longer than is permissible under their country's constitutions. He also called for job creation for Africa's youth. From Addis Ababa, Coletta Wanjoe reports.
While in Addis Ababa, President Obama first held bilateral talks with the chairperson of the African Union Commission, Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma, on issues including agriculture, energy and security. He then addressed the African Union, the first U.S. president to do so. He used the opportunity to highlight the existing challenge in African politics of leaders refusing to leave after their terms are over. President Obama cited the example of Burundi, where President Nkurunziza has just been declared the winner in a presidential election, even though he has already completed two terms in office. Obama insisted that the African Union must assist in ensuring that African leaders follow their constitutions and laws, which set limits on their stay in power.
When a leader tries to change the rules in the middle of the game just to stay in office, it risks instability and strife, as we've seen in Burundi. And this is often just the first step down a perilous path. And sometimes you'll hear a leader say, well, I'm the only person who can hold this nation together.
Obama has reiterated that Africa needs good governance, saying that Africa does not need strong leaders, but strong institutions that can translate into a positive war against terrorist groups like Al-Shabaab from Somalia and Boko Haram in West Africa.
Our efforts to ensure our shared security must be matched by a commitment to improved governance. Those things are connected. Good governance is one of the best weapons against terrorism and instability. Our fight against terrorist groups, for example, will never be won if we fail to address legitimate grievances that terrorists may try to exploit, if we don't build trust with all communities, if we don't uphold the rule of law. There's a saying, and I believe it is true, if we sacrifice liberty in the name of security, we risk losing both.
The African Union already has an African Charter on Democracy, Elections and Good Governance that it drew up in 2007, but implementation is still a challenge. The AU has set a target of 2020 as the year by which all member states should sign, ratify and domesticate the Charter and develop benchmarks for the implementation of its commitments and principles. Among the many Ethiopians listening to the speech was Henok Demeke, a communications officer at the African Union. He felt President Obama's visit had been important for his country.
It is very important for us because it changed our image from our world. So it's better to come and to see everything from everyone. So it is better to our country.
However, in his speech to the African Union, the U.S. president also expressed criticism of Ethiopia's arrest of journalists and lack of open ground for opposition parties.
Coletta Wanjoe in Addis Ababa. During his visit to Kenya and Ethiopia, Obama promoted the cause of human rights in Africa. So did this message give authoritarian African leaders any encouragement or incentive to change their ways? My colleague Isaac Mugabe asked Liesl Law, consultant at the Institute for Security Studies in South Africa, for her views on Obama's visit.
I think it was good that Obama spoke up about the issue around third terms and presidents respecting their constitutions. You know, is a crisis on the continent at the moment, and it is a source of instability in places like Burundi and even in the DRC, where the opposition are taking to the streets. And in Burundi, we've seen political violence because presidents refuse to step down. He spoke about freedom of speech, and you know, in Ethiopia, there is very little freedom of speech, and journalists are regularly put behind bars. And it was good that he spoke up, I think, on those issues.
Can you see the African Union taking action on presidential terms in the wake of Obama's remarks?
The tricky thing is, the African Union Commission itself has very little power. The highest decision-making body of the African Union is the Assembly of Heads of State. And they met in June in South Africa, and they will meet again only in January again in Addis Ababa. The AU Commission and its chairperson, Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma, have got really no power to make decisions. And it is a pity that Obama couldn't stand up in front of the heads of state and make such a speech. But obviously, one can't really see that happening. You know, if he would come to an AU assembly meeting, he would completely, I think, derail the whole gathering. And people say that that's why he chose to go to the AU headquarters. It is rather odd, almost, because the people he spoke to in Addis Ababa are not the real decision makers.
Many Africans were disappointed by the lack of interest shown in their continent by the first African-American president of the U.S., especially during his first term. Has this visit made amends for that?
Yes, I think Kenyans are happy that he came to Kenya after all this time. If you listen to all his speeches and the statements that he made during this trip, he was much more inclined to own up to his own legacy as being an African-American, and that with roots in Kenya, things he never mentioned before. And one can understand why, because of the domestic context within America, he first probably had to establish himself as truly American before coming to Africa and owning up on that. There is always the criticism that people say George W. Bush did more for Africa than all the Democratic presidents because of projects like AGOA, the African Growth and Opportunity Act, which Obama just renewed, which has been fantastic for African exports, and PEPFAR, the AIDS project, a number of anti-malaria projects and so on. So still, people will look back at his two terms in office, and he hasn't really championed the cause of Africa globally.
Lisa Law, consultant at the Institute for Security Studies.
News, analysis and feature reports, all that here on Africa Link.
Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari travels to neighbouring Cameroon today for talks with President Paul Biya on ways to combat the threat from Boko Haram. According to one of his spokesmen, Garba Shehu, the visit to Cameroon is part of efforts to build a strong regional alliance in order to confront Boko Haram. Isaac Mugabe found out more from our correspondent in Yaoundé, Moki Kinseka.
You know, Isaac, that there have been accusations between the militaries in Cameroon and the Nigerian military about the way this war against Boko Haram has been carried out. These mutual accusations with Nigeria saying that Cameroon was not doing enough and that the country was a hideout or staging ground for Boko Haram fighters, with Cameroon saying Nigeria was not also doing enough by refusing its military from going across the borders to Nigeria to tackle the enemy, was not doing good for the two countries. I think with Buhari coming to Cameroon, the two leaders will be able to sit together to discuss and see what to do for the militaries of the two countries, joined, of course, by Chad and Niger. It is becoming a serious problem with suicide bomb attacks. I asked the same question to the Minister of Communication for Cameroon, who is government spokesperson, how significant this visit will be for Cameroon and for Nigeria and for the entire sub-region. This is what he said.
In coming to Cameroon at a time when the Boko Haram terrorist group, which is seemingly defeated on the military front, this high-level visit is an opportunity for both head of state of Cameroon and Nigeria to discuss and agree on the best ways and to, above all, come out with common strategy to boot out the destructive Boko Haram sect.
That was Cameroon's communications minister and spokesperson. Now, Buhari's visit comes 8 weeks after he visited neighboring Niger and Chad, but not Cameroon. Do we know why he's taken long to visit Cameroon?
Well, it is difficult to tell, but then what we want to think is that there are still some scars of the ongoing quarrel that was between Cameroon and Nigeria, the quarrel that had to do with Cameroon not taking the fight seriously. Some observers here in Cameroon have been trying to look at the situation from the angle when Buhari was military ruler of Nigeria in the 80s, he actually sent troops to occupy the Bakassi Peninsula, and Cameroon's president, Paul Biya, was against that occupation. It led to serious bloody confrontations until the International Court of Justice came up and negotiated, and Bakassi was handed back to Cameroon.
Okay, well, Mok, I can see some old rivalry between the two leaders. Then how would you describe the current relations between Cameroon and Nigeria, especially that they need to fight together to end the insurgency created by Boko Haram?
One thing that we must know is that if Nigeria and Cameroon fail to mutually agree, they will perish because they have a common enemy, I said earlier, and this enemy is Boko Haram. They should keep besides this rivalry. We are talking here about 80,000 refugees from Nigeria in Cameroon. We are considering the situation of 100,000 internally displaced people in Cameroon because of Boko Haram insurgency. We are talking about hundreds of thousands of people who have been killed in this battle. If Cameroon and Nigeria fail to sit down and negotiate a solution to this problem, it will not be good. And if they did negotiate a solution, then their economies will be boosted.
Maki Kinseka in Yaounde talking to Isaac Mugabe.
Behind the headlines.
And behind the headlines this week, we head to Ghana, where the government has been reviewing its efforts over the last 6 months to stabilise an ailing economy. Inflation rose to 17% in June. The country is also suffering from an energy crisis. Ghana now has a 3-year aid deal with the International Monetary Fund, but for ordinary Ghanaians, the state of the economy still looks precarious. From Accra, Isaac Kelechi reports.
On the streets of Ghana's capital, Accra, Ghanaians have their own assessment of the state of the country's economy. The most striking ones come from a market in the central business district, where small-scale businesses are feeling the brunt of current situation.
The economy is very bad. The economy is sinking because of the light off. Baba, I need the light to work. If only the government can fix the light for us, I think it will be good for us.
Very, very, very bad. It's an insulting economy you are living in right now, because if the president himself can come out and come and promise that, oh, by this time of the month, we'll get a better solution, then you come out about 3 months' time and tell us, and in 6 months' time, you'll get another solution. Then it's an insult to Ghana.
The light off is really disturbing us. Because of that, we come and sit here the whole day, we'll not do anything, just sit down till the evening that the lights will come. Oh, this year, it's not going well.
Major businesses have had to lay off workers. According to the Industrial and Commercial Workers Union, this year alone has seen over 1,000 job cuts across all sectors in Ghana. Latest figures from Ghana Statistical Service, however, put the country's unemployment rate at 5.2% in 2014 from a previous 5.9% in 2012. Latest job cuts would therefore mean recent successes could be eroded. Solomon Kote is General Secretary of the Union.
All the kind of ad hoc solutions government is trying to look for are just a fluke, are just a joke. We don't know whether the people who are running the issue are at their wit's ends and further ideas are not coming to find a solution to this problem.
Due to lack of funds to resolve unemployment and energy crisis, the government is resorting to accessing loans and floating bonds on the international market. Parliament has for the past months approved almost $500 million in loan facilities. For some minority lawmakers with the opposition NPP, the trend will cripple the economy sooner. But for MPs from the government, the huge loans should not be of worry to Ghanaians. Alhaji Amadou Sorogo is one of such MPs.
The simple matter is that if countries don't have confidence in your country, they will never even think about giving you a loan, let alone being concessional. Mind you, we are now a lower middle income country.
The opposition leader Nana Akufo-Addo disagrees and says only a government under him has the right solutions.
Industrial transformation of our nation, that is the overall strategic objective of our era. And when our era is over, Ghana, the raw material producing country, will be replaced by Ghana, an industrial nation that trades with the rest of the world.
But for financial consultant Gabriel Kwejo Esofi, if the government wants to have a long-term fix, it will have to control its spending and pay off its debts, as well as reform revenue mobilization system.
Why can't government be as responsible as we do in our homes? So we owe, but you have to make a conscious effort at retiring the debt. Government should do housekeeping too.
And that report was compiled by Isaac Kelechi in Accra. On Tuesday, the German armed forces, the Bundeswehr, took command of the European Union training mission in Mali. About 160 German soldiers are currently stationed in the West African country. And by mid-August, that number should have risen to almost 200. Among those taking part in the handover ceremony in Mali's capital, Bamako, was German Defence Minister Ursula von der Leyen. Susan Holton has this report.
The Malian soldiers receive a form of basic training at the hands of the Bundeswehr. The training plan includes, for example, lessons in how to hold and operate weapons correctly, how to store ammunition, and how to detect booby traps. The goal is to make the Malian army capable of defending the country itself, without help from outside. Mali has many problems: poverty, lack of perspectives, terrorism, a mixture that causes many people to leave and seek a better life in Europe. German Defence Minister Ursula von der Leyen believes the training mission will bring greater stability, not only for Mali, but also the region.
We know that nothing will dissuade people more than from embarking on a dangerous journey to Europe than the fact that they see a perspective in their own country, that they see a future there for themselves and are ready to stay and contribute to their country's development.
Such perspectives have been absent for a long time. In the north, there are still frequent clashes between rebels and the Malian army. Shortly before Tuesday's handover ceremony, von der Leyen met with Tuareg representatives to talk about combating weapons smuggling and drug trafficking by radical Islamist groups in the north, who rely on this to finance their activities. If von der Leyen had any doubts about the sincerity and commitment of the Tuaregs, she did not let this show. Nothing should overshadow the declared goal of creating a peaceful perspective for Mali. Hopes for a better future rest mainly on a peace agreement, which most rebel groups signed last month. But Bundeswehr officers in Mali do not think they will be leaving soon. Markus Milder is a German army officer with the United Nations peacekeeping mission to Mali, MINUSMA, based in the north. MINUSMA was set up in 2013 with some 11,000 military personnel and another 1,500 police. Milder's description of the situation confirms the impression that this will be a long-term operation.
We lack soldiers who can go out and patrol. We are currently busy with building the barracks. As soon as that's finished in a couple of weeks or months, we will be able to send more soldiers out.
The combination of MINUSMA and the EU's training mission is a sign that the West has a strong interest in strengthening stability in Mali and in helping the country to be able to help itself. But there's still a long way to go.
Susan Holton reporting.
Opinion.
And in Opinion Today, we return to our top story. US President Barack Obama has ended his trip to Kenya and Ethiopia. He found the right words to charm many people. But according to DW's Daniel Peltz, Obama's visit won't change much in Africa.
Barack Obama's East Africa tour was a visit that would have made any foreign affairs lecturer proud. Obama came, saw, and said the right thing wherever he was. Polite calls to respect human rights and democracy to soothe civil society, uplifting rhetoric that Africa can solve its problems, and he had the necessary pragmatism to foster cooperation with Kenya and Ethiopia in security and business matters. But with Air Force One in the air to Washington and Nairobi streets coming back to life, one thing is clear. There is no reason for Obama mania in Africa, and there never was. His calls to Kenyans to shun ethnic politics and fight corruption will lead nowhere. Kenyans have stopped counting how many times they heard such calls from visiting foreign dignitaries and how many times they heard promises from their own politicians to root out these menaces. Frankly, Kenyans do not need to hear such calls because most of them have a very clear vision of what sort of country they want to live in. They simply lack the necessary politicians to turn these calls into reality. If Obama had really wanted to make a difference in the country where his father was born, he should not have mingled with President Uhuru Kenyatta and Vice President William Ruto. The International Criminal Court accuses the two of being among the masterminds of the ethnic violence after the elections in 2007. Calling for change but carrying on with business as usual in security and trade matters does not lead anywhere. Supporting Kenya's security forces, which are known for corruption and human rights abuses, does not make his calls sound credible. If Kenya was not enough to show the gap between the president's visions and current US-Africa policy, his visit to Ethiopia definitely was. Obama visited a country where the prime minister's party controls all seats in parliament, where press freedom is under serious threat and opposition politicians are intimidated by the ever-present security forces. Obama did call for more democratic space for all Ethiopians, more respect for press freedom and human rights. Then he agreed to extend cooperation with Ethiopia's security forces in the fight against the Islamist Al-Shabaab militia in neighboring Somalia. That's good news for Ethiopia's government. It's the right thing to do for an American president who wants to protect his country from the risk posed by Al-Shabaab. But what signal does it send to Ethiopia's opposition and civil society who feel the pressure from these very security forces every day? In his passionate speech in front of the African Union Assembly, Obama showed a glimpse of the visionary man he is deep inside. The audience was glued to his lips when he challenged Africa's leaders to respect term limits and step down. When he emphasized how much he is looking forward to life outside the White House. When he beseeched the audience to eliminate corruption once and for all. But changing Africa is more about deeds than about words. If Obama really wants to make a difference in the continent his father came from, he has to dare to turn his visions for Africa into government policies. His present pragmatism won't make Africa a better place.
Daniel Peltz, and what's your opinion on Obama's visit to Africa? Tell us what you think either in an email to feedback.africa@dw.com, in a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany, or in an SMS to country code 49160957595510. Our main stories. US President Barack Obama has urged African leaders to practice good governance, end corruption, and respect human rights. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari travels to neighbouring Cameroon today for talks on combating Boko Haram. And we've also been hearing from Ghanaians who are calling on their government to fix the economy and solve the energy crisis. Thank you for listening. From me, Mark Caldwell. Bye now.